Would you particularly mind if I suggested we sit quietly for a moment with Bob up until we explain? You might enjoy chatting about this evening. I'd said, well, people always very much like Baba stories, and especially how people came to Baba. And I immediately went in the rebellion, and I said, but that's just sort of cream puff pleasure. After all, they're fascinating stories, but what does that do to push people along as far as their own personal relationship and their own inner life with Baba is concerned? So, you see, having said that vigorously, you can tackle me now on that subject. No, anybody. I know that Baba's stories are enchanting and they're a lot of fun. I sometimes think, however, that we do spend so much time with different people's recountings that lots of times people don't have any time or any energy or even perhaps any incentive to get into what Bob himself has said about creation, what we're all doing here, and how we get on with the job that has to be done. So then Ned said, well, what about talking a little bit about the discourses? And I've had my nose so thoroughly to the grindstone on discourses for about 20 years now that I got a little bit of mental fatigue even thinking about it. But incidentally, one project might possibly interest you. When I went back over to England in 1968, they started up for the first time in England, a permanent center. And so as one of the activities there, I offered to do a regular weekly study group in the discourses. I think there were perhaps, 25, 35 people who worked for 5 solid years every week on the discourses until we got to the end of it. And at the end of that time, in fact, even before we finally got completely through the discourses, a number of the group decided that they would like to tackle God Speaks. But after about 2, maybe 3 years of that, they got mental fatigue, and so that subject was put aside. The group disbanded for about a year, and then about 2/3 of the people said, well, let's we need some sort of a focal point in our life that relates to Baba. Can't we reform the group and take up some subject directly related with Baba again?
I would appreciate it sometime in the evening. I know it's appropriate now.
You would interrupt any old time and just toss whatever you'd like into the pot. I love it.
Your personal feelings about doubts. See, I have a problem about doubts.
Mm-hmm. No. Who doesn't?
If you share where you are with that. Do you have doubts?
Well, I had 7 years of doubts. Lots of them. I guess maybe I'm almost the world's Mayor Baba specialist in doubts. That'd be a good subject, incidentally, to tackle. But I'll just finish off the little story about that original discourse group in London. When they came to me and said, well, can't we reorganize and pick some sort of a topic? I guess I was probably a little bit selfish, and or maybe very selfish, and certainly very blunt, and said immediately, well, the only thing, quite frankly, that interests me at this point is interrelatedness with Baba in one's daily life. I said, no. If you people are interested in that, if that seems of great importance to you, then I'm perfectly willing to pitch in and work along and see where we get together on it. So they all sort of looked at each other and, am I talking loud enough for you over in the corner? sometimes I talk a little bit silently, and I hear a little magpie going on out in the kitchen, so I'm not sure. No, don't worry about me, Ned. I'm just worried about you, whether you hear. So they said, well, but what else is of importance? And so the group reformed at that point. We all sat down and said, well, how does one go about inner relatedness to Baba in daily life? And no one at that particular moment had any panacea, any formula that they could toss into the pot. But different people said, well, I seem to remember so-and-so. Maybe we'd get some clues out of that. And what about the new life? Would that have some clues? Because Baba apparently was laying down the blueprint for the new humanity, for the Avatar Mare Baba period. And so everybody says, oh yes, we should tackle the new life. And what about surrenderance and one-pointedness and concentration and focus and things of that sort? So we added them to the agenda. So that particular group that started 10 years ago on Baba's discourses is still meeting regularly, pushing, and the experiences, now that they have been focusing for about 3 years on their own interrelatedness to Baba, related to their everyday life, what has been happening in terms of developing a real sense, immediacy of Baba has been quite extraordinary. So, at any rate, I did want to tell you that Ned suggested the discourses, and that reminded me of this group, which has been typical of one type of attack or approach to make Baba real, to apply him in one's own personal life. I think that this question of one's own relationship to Baba, I doubt very much that, except for Ned and myself, that there's anybody in the room who did meet Baba in the flesh. This must present a considerable question mark for most people. So this might just possibly be something that you'd also like to get into this evening. How does one go about Baba? What are the relative advantages or disadvantages of different approaches? There are a lot of people, you know, who say, oh, to hell with words and intellectualism, even if it's Baba's words. We just don't cotton to that sort of a thing. It's too superficial on the surface. What we want to do is dive deep into feeling for Baba. I know a number of people, for instance, who work on projects, creative projects, which they feel are deeply related to Baba, and this is the way that they relate internally to Baba. I know others who get absolutely horrified at the thought of any sort of group activity, and they shy away from even meeting another person who is known to be another Baba lover. About the only time you ever run across their trail is on maybe some extraordinary occasion when somebody who had lived close to Baba for a whole lifetime happens to come along. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think it's very easy. For instance, the Society in New York have done music and motion pictures, just very typically beautiful creative projects, and the manner in which they as a group, as a whole, focus, go through all sorts of problems, arguments, fights, creative brainstorms, and so on. There's a tremendous ferment in the focus on Baba that goes on, and very, very practical activities. There are quite a few people, as you well know, who write absolutely magnificent music, who perform, record. There are a number of people also who write superb poetry, prose poetry related to Baba. Were you about to say something, Dan?
Yeah, I do have something to say.
Yes.
Would you contrast your extreme feelings about one time, or your most extreme feelings, with the point at which you
All right. since you both raised the point, why don't we just jump right into the middle of that one? Will you forgive me if I'm terribly blunt and honest with you about this question? I know what one is supposed to do at this point is look at a lot of smiling faces and reinforce all of your firm beliefs rather than talk about the doubting things. But, you know, really, I don't think that there is an individual who ever comes across an important topic in his life, let alone their Baba, where there aren't enormous doubts that are involved. And you just sort of, you can't just butter them up and pretend they aren't there. You have to dive if you're going to form any sort of a sound basis for your future ongoing in that field or with that individual. So, let us say this. I first knew of the subject of Meher Baba in about, 1944? At any rate, I'd been initiated as a Sufi by Inayat Khan's first initiate in the Western world, Murshid Rabia Martin in San Francisco, and had studied several years under her. One day, she sent out a notice to her students in California. She was the Murshid, incidentally, for North America, South America, and Australia, and with a certain confusion as to whether Western Europe was included in that or not. So she sent out to her immediate, close-at-hand students a notification they should come to her home for a special meeting. When we came there, in her home in San Francisco, she recounted that, according to the Sufi tradition, that since the death of her master, Murshid Inayat Khan, in 1928, she had spent the intervening years looking for another master to continue her teaching. Eventually, she had run across two ladies in New York, Elizabeth Patterson and Princess Narina Machiavelli. And through them, she had been made aware that there was a great teacher in the world by the name of Meher Baba. She had spent 2 years then talking a great deal with him, reading and studying the works that Meher Baba had written or had given out up to that point. And she told us that she had come to the conclusion after these 2 years that this was the great spiritual master of the age. I think those are almost her identical words. She had, as a consequence, decided that she would place herself and her order under his guidance, his direction. Imagine, this woman was, perhaps 72 years old at the time. The tremendous flexibility and the tremendous decision that she took at that point. Every time I think about it, I admire her guts, her courage. So what did she do? She was a good Leo, incidentally. And you all know the characteristics of Leo. They get on with it, and sometimes even possibly a tiny bit belligerently. So she said, "Now, I'm convinced of this, and in the next 2 or 3 days, both Elizabeth Patterson and Narina Machiavelli are going to be in San Francisco, so I invite you all to come up to the summer school at Fairfax, just in the North Peninsula, and listen to them. And after that, I give you each 2 weeks to decide whether you accept Meher Baba and continue with me, or whether you reject Meher Baba, in which case I can no longer be your teacher." So we all went up to Fairfax to the school 2-3 days after that. Elizabeth Patterson and Narina Machiavelli and another very lovely, very elderly lady at that time, Mildred Kyle from Seattle. I don't know if that rings any bell at all with you. I think Mildred was in her late 80s, perhaps even early 90s at that point. We met them, and then Narina Machiavelli gave an address on the nature of Meher Baba. Narina Machiavelli was an extraordinary woman, extremely gifted, highly artistic, highly emotional, and I must confess that I probably have almost exactly the opposite temperament, reared through the university in sciences and mathematics, and sort of not accustomed to an emotional and a highly personalized approach to such things. So instead of being, let's say, solidly united, I had a tremendous problem immediately. And then certain writings and descriptions were passed around to the various different students of Mercy to Martin. One of the first things that I found out was that Mayor Baba had taken a vow of silence way back in 1925 and hadn't talked since. My gracious, you know, that's a very strange way to do things. And then I found out that nevertheless he communicated on an alphabet board. That got me rather upset. But I thought, well, so if he's going to communicate, why doesn't he do it straightforwardly, the natural, simple way? Why make it tough for oneself, you know? It just seemed like a needless thing to have to jump over. And then I began reading a few little stories about his having promised the people who were traveling with him that he'd break his silence in the Hollywood Bowl. And then he didn't. And why under the sun pick Hollywood Bowl of all places? You know, anybody in San Francisco thinks Southern California is just a creation of the devil and practically ready to drop off of the universe anyway. I mean, in those days, at least, we felt that way. Later on, San Francisco became, you know, more liberalized than Southern California, but that was still in the future. So I began to have all of these problems and associated with Mayor Baba and strange actions that just made absolutely no sense. What about all this business of the silence? And what about making promises and then not keeping promises? I mean, in the business world, if you had somebody that you were negotiating a contract with and he gave you his word on something or another, then you get around for delivery time of the petroleum or whatever the commodity was, and it wasn't there, well, by gosh, you didn't have any more dealings. In fact, you probably hauled him into court. So, you see, I had a big conflict of interest and of credulity that was involved here. So, dutifully, within 3 or 4 or 5 days, I trotted back over to Mercy to Martin and honestly explained to her that I was having all sorts of static. And she waded into me. My gosh, she really waded into me and asked me how under the sun I, at my picayune stage of trying to get my little toe beginning on the path, could judge somebody who had already traversed the path. How could I know what sort of characteristics and actions and ways of handling people he would go through? You know, how, her favorite expression, how can the drop measure the ocean? Well, you know, that sort of got home to me, but it still didn't answer these fundamental things. So I went back and I knew that there was absolutely no way that I was going to sort out these basic impasses between the manner in which I had been reared and the sort of things that Mayor Baba was merrily going on doing in his life. So I had to retreat from that. Excuse me for answering your two questions at such length. If I bore you, just say, look, we're getting pretty well along now and we think we understand that. But to bring just a few more little points into it, I knew there was no way that I could resolve these head-on impasses, and so it resolved to something else. Although I certainly realized I was the drop, at least Mercy to Martin had to be a teacup. And if she, with her knowledge, her development, there's no question about that, if she said, for myself, I know that this is the great spiritual teacher of the age, then how else could I judge the subject? And so I just had to say to myself, if this is her decision, then I know it has to be basically right and sane, and I must trust that I will gradually sort these things out. That my trust and my love for the Mercida are the first. So I went back after 2 weeks and I said, Mercida, I've come to the conclusion that since you have accepted him, he must be what you say he is, and so I accepted. She was very pleased. That was, as I say, in about 1945, and as you remember the history of Baba, he didn't come again to the Western world until 1952. He kept postponing. He had set a date and postponed. Well, you can imagine the agonies that always put me through, because I think, God, can't he make up his mind? Why doesn't he just wait to tell us when he's going to come until he really knows he's going to come? But one of the first things that I found out, being a Sufi, I had certain responsibilities. And at one particular time, those responsibilities, which were not given me by Murshid Martin, but were in the nature of things, I was only able to get perhaps 4 or 5 hours sleep a night for months and months and months and months. And when I'd go to work, I'd be so tired out getting to work in the morning that I didn't know how I'd get through 1 hour of my professional work, let alone 8 hours. And then I found out, I don't know exactly how, but gave me the idea that if I would sit very, very quietly for the first hour, hour and a half, not saying anything, not speaking, that some way my forces within me would recoup and renip. And that gave me just a tiny little bit of insight, and I began to realize that speech has a tremendous force. It uses a tremendous amount of energy. And I began to think, my golly, if I were doing something which required extraordinary accumulation, concentration, and focus of energy in the world, then silence or some sort of utilization of silence would probably be a very important factor in it. Well, I wasn't at all sure whether this might have anything to do with Baba science, but I realized the connection between speech and one's own psychic energy. And then I began to see a few other little clues. It was very, very interesting, and I realized later on that obviously Baba was taking me in absentia through a gradual learning program. During the course of 7 years, either I realized answers inside of myself for every single doubt I had, or at least I was in a neutral position through my own learning and situations. So by the time Baba finally came to America again in 1952, I was either positively accepting certain things that he did, or at least I could take a neutral attitude. When I met him in New York, it didn't even take 1 second to know that this was the being of the most sublime nature and character that I'd ever been in contact with. And the second thing that I knew immediately was that he knew me in the most minute detail and accepted me in the most minute detail, more than I knew myself and more than I could ever accept myself. So not even 15 minutes of that first interview was necessary to realize the absolute authenticity of Murshid Martin's original decision, and that this was the man who was my guide for all of my life, and probably many lifetimes. Have I answered your point? Do you want to discuss any of them further?
What level did you realize?
Was it just instinctively internally? There was no question. As if it was something I'd always known and always lived with. It was so fundamental.
It's no longer based on belief, blind faith, it was an experience.
Yeah, it was an inner understanding and knowing of the quality of Bob and his relationship to me. Instantaneous. Yes.
I just wonder if sight played an important part of the question.
Well, this, again, is an awfully good and a very, very basic question, because it's fundamentally the question that each of you who have not had sight come across. Let me say this, that in my own personal experience since Baba dropped the body, I've worked with, been close to, and close friend to many, 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 many young people, both in America and in Europe. And to watch, to experience with them the inner growing knowledge of the reality of Baba and his relationship to them and the identity of Baba to their inner nature. The same experience that I had in the flesh, to see how that is established has been one of the most extraordinarily interesting things in my life. There are some individuals who come to that sense of inner identity in the presence of Baba very quickly. And there are many others who develop it over a period of what I would call learning in action. Maybe sight was important in the particular case. I rather think that Baba selected the moment of our being together to give me the certitude of himself and of our relationship. And I have seen that certitude happen completely without the sight of Baba. The people who became aware of a Baba considerably long after he dropped his body. So I do not feel that sight is a necessary ingredient at all. I know it is not a necessary ingredient for many, 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 many people.
I would like to say something about that. The same experience that you had, Sam Bob, is the same experience I had in Bob's past, when I was going to come back from Bob. That everything I've seen, he's a momentary flash young. He was who he said he was, and he looked more like everyone I've seen. So I know there are people who have some experience when I've never seen Bob.
But seems to me really important is the sight has nothing to do with the master freeway, because he says he's not the Baba. Their experience of seeing him is not what the master freeway is.
This question is not necessarily intermediate because I knew Baba before he dropped the body. And I've always wondered, was there any importance in the people who had to know about Baba before? I mean, for them, you know what I'm saying? Was it a necessary thing? But I've always had that feeling about myself that if I hadn't known about Baba in the body, I might not even have come to him.
If you had known him.
If I hadn't known, if I hadn't known him in the body.
While he was still
in
the body.
While he was in the body. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
I doubt that that would have been necessary. I mean, your timing, you're right to that type of a contact, you're right to a master, to a guide in your life, is something which depends upon your own inner timing. And whether or not Bob is in the body is really irrelevant. Well, do you mind if for my own sake, I take 2 minutes and just do a little bit of very, very dense, abstruse philosophy. And I apologize if this sort of reasoning doesn't appeal. But I would like to say what I know is the basis of the reality of this. Remember this, that Baba is God. Baba is a perfected one. And as you know, perfection is something which is beyond material creation. It is outside of and beyond, because perfection is God. Always remember that Baba points out very clearly, and everything that I know in my scientific background completely corroborates what Baba says in this area. Everything that our great modern physicists tell us completely corroborate these basic facts, that as you go from the denser material to the less material and the less material, you go into situations where time and space are more and more irrelevant. They are less and less present. And so an individual who is God, which means outside of materiality, completely beyond materiality, is absolutely unlimited by time and space. All right? If this is true, Baba's dropping the body has so little to do with the reality of Baba and whatever he wants to do, feels is necessary. He is beyond all space, he is beyond all time, he is beyond the limitation of all matter. This is why, for instance, Ned Foote in Washington can feel the immediacy and the presence of Bob at his shoulder in every detail in his life. And Mayor G. Karkari in Pune in India can have this identical sense of Baba participating in every moment of his life. And Adi Sr. in Ahmednagar can say the same thing. And Don Stevens sitting over in Madrid or hopping in an airplane to London can say very, very honestly exactly the same thing. And somebody says, how the hell can the man be in so many places? You must all be deluded and dreaming. They are realities. I've had too many experiences and deep, pungent, realistic experiences relating to daily life to doubt this. This is not a bit of daydreaming. It is far from it. How? How can it be done? Simply because he has absolutely no binding in time and space. And this is why his having dropped the body has absolutely nothing to do with the forcefulness with which he contacts an individual when it is the right timing for that individual internally. He can contact, let us say, Charles today just as strongly as he could contact Charles when he was still in the body, when it is the right moment and the right internal timing for Charles. Ending the silence? All right. Do you want me to tell you my own personal conviction on the silence and the breaking of the silence? Do you ever go back and read the Old Testament in which it says, and first there was the Word? All right. If you stop to think of what the Word is, what under the sun is a word? Well, look, you go into a laboratory and look at what turns out. Was the word, all right? Word is a disturbance in the air, it's in the atmosphere, it's a fundamental disturbance. But what was the whim of God when God had the whim to know himself? It was the disturbance in the infinite, unified existence of God himself. All of creation is a disturbance. It is a wave motion. Electricity is a wave motion. Radio is a wave motion. Atoms are wave motions, fundamentally, basically. Energy is a wave motion. A disturbance on a pond is a wave motion. And so when you say, first there was the Word, this is a very, very simple, very easily understandable, even quite primitive way of saying there was a disturbance. All right, so if, all right, let's take it then the next step. All of creation is disturbances of one sort or another, of one type or another, and a word is a disturbance. So if Baba is going to say the word, the only meaningful word to give all of creation a push, what this simply means is he puts an energy of disturbance into the situation, not necessarily an oral word. He increases the force and the strength of the disturbance so that it moves faster, it's got more impetus to it. And then I began thinking as this began occurring, this all began to occur to me when I went back on one strange occasion and reread Genesis. And I was so struck by this statement, first was, there was the word. I said, gee whiz, this has to relate to Mayor Baba and the Word, the beginning of all creation. Then I began to think to myself, golly day, from the time that I was about 20 years old and first became deeply interested in mysticism and occultism and God knows what, I was aware, first, there were very few people in those days who were interested in it. Secondly, I was painfully aware as the years went along, how slow the progress of these people were, how difficult it was to get anybody else even to dabble a little toe in the water of these fields. And what happens? All of a sudden, in the early 60s, the reverse happens. There is a tremendous surge of people who just automatically feel at home with these concepts. And just as soon as you lay out certain simple truths to them, they grasp them just as if they were old friends. They leap ahead and experience. And I said to myself, this must have been the great surge to creation, which it is the avatar's function to give. And if there is a real speaking of word, this is the real word, which gives this great surge of energy, this great boost to the complexity of experience and creation. It's, if you plotted a graph, there is dear old humanity sort of gradually pulling itself up by its bootstraps internally in its own spiritual inner processes. All of a sudden, in the early 60s, that curve goes suddenly up like that. Well, if Baba was Baba, if he was the avatar, he had to be associated with that. And for me, the saying of the only word that is meaningful happened at precisely that point. For me, Baba broke his silence in the meaningful sense of the word considerably before he dropped the body. Yes?
Well, it does say, and I think it's in the beloved, it says the word will be audible to your ears.
It was sure audible to my ears. Absolutely everybody was running around and screaming about spiritual truth. To me, it was audible within all of humanity at that point. But I'm quibbling with words now. Baba says so many, many, many things, which on the surface of it you say, well, that's the obvious interpretation. 10, 20 years later, all of a sudden, it strikes you and says, my God, now I see what that man meant in that. So I can't pretend just quickly to dive in and reconcile what you were saying there. I believe that he gave that great push to creation, and especially to inner appreciation of the spiritual processes, starting in the relatively early 60s. Then I think, I asked both Arish and Bal about this when I was in India last August, because I was describing this little personal theory to them, and said, now, why under the sun, I said, to me, excuse me, I have to entangle one other little incident into this. I felt myself that because I became so aware of the intimate detail in which Baba was involved in my life, an extraordinary detail. So I said to Arish, Arish, I wonder if Baba didn't spend so much time in seclusion because for the first time the avatar plotted out our individual lives in extraordinary detail. So is this the reason that Baba spent so much time in seclusion in the latter part of his life, even after I felt he had said the word? I said, no, Don, it's for a different reason, because this particular avataric incarnation is the end of a whole cycle. At the beginning of the cycle, the avatar is like a new chairman of the board of directors. He comes in all full of vim and vigor, you know. He's got a whole bunch of new projects for the corporation. And so he lays them out. And as he keeps coming back in as the avatar, it's sort of, let's say, you know, like getting a new president or a new vice president or so on there. And he keeps giving pushes to these various different projects. But then when he comes to the end of that particular age, that's end of the cycle, these projects, which he started at the beginning of the cycle, both Arish and Bal gave exactly the same explanation. He then has an abnormally tedious, detailed rechecking of all of the progress that his special projects for that age have made, adjusting and finishing them off. So they said that was the reason Baba spent so much time in seclusion, especially right at the end of his life. So this, to me, Baba did all this rechecking after he had spoken the word, given the tremendous surge to creation, and then did the final checking of the chairman of the board to finish off that age. Interesting.
Don, can you talk a little bit about how God Speaks came about?
Yes. Baba had been giving, actually, for several years in a very detailed, methodical manner, a great deal of material to Dr. Abdul Ghani Munseef. You remember, he was a Muslim, close follower of Baba, an old schoolmate of Baba, in fact. And this was to be the material for God Speaks. It was supposed to be the description of the base of creation and man's role in creation. So then Baba came finally in 1952 to America. While he was here, I think it was actually while he was here, Dr. Ghani died. If it was not when Baba was actually here, it was soon after Baba returned. In any rate, very close to 1952. When Baba was here, he told Murshid Adus and myself that a book, which was to be God Speaks, although the name was not chosen, would be sent over for editing and that we should get it printed just as rapidly as possible. When Dr. Ghani died, and Baba had one of the mandali check the notes and what he had written up, Baba said, but he's misunderstood very, very important and key parts here. So, as a consequence, Baba had all of the Ghani manuscript set aside, and Baba himself dictated to Arish with on the alphabet board, dictated during the course of the day, God Speaks. Arish took his notes, transcribed them at night, slept almost not at all, and then the next morning would check back what he had taken from his notes and written up in detail, checked it back with Baba. Baba went through it meticulously, changed whatever needed to be changed, and then gave new material to Arish. So this went on for a period of several weeks. And then, as you know, Arish wrote the final chapter himself in God Speaks. Now then, Baba sent this manuscript plus the original Dr. Ghani manuscript over here to Murshid Adus and to myself. So he said, now, do what you want. I'm sending Ghani's manuscript to you. Make whatever use of it you want. Throw it away if you want it. Take parts of it from it if you want it. Use it however you want. So, here were two manuscripts, the part that Arish had transcribed from Baba's direct dictation and the Ghani manuscript. Murshid Adus made the decision that there was a great deal of valuable material in the Ghani manuscript. She took that and said, I'm going to try to bring together the parts that seem to be most valuable. Don, you take the part that Arish transcribed direct from Baba. We went our separate ways for several weeks. And then when we got back together in Washington, she had selected certain portions of the Munseef material and done the necessary editing on it while I'd been editing the fore part. All of this was then sent to Baba as we had edited it. Baba reread it, said, fine, this is perfect, and this is what Dodd we then published.
What was the part?
It is the appendix. In the original,
that is the appendix.
That is Abdul Ghani Munseef material taken from Baba, but reviewed by Baba for its correctness. That's him. That's the first appendix in the first edition. In the second edition, you know, there is a further second appendix of other material. This is not Munseef material. Supplement. Well, what of the Dr. Ghani Munseef material Murshid Adus left out, I don't know, because quite frankly, when I got done the responsibility assigned to me, I was so corked that I didn't want to look at a word for months. But I can say, as far as what I did on the material dictated by Baba direct to Arish, which is, you know, the God Speaks material, the only thing that I did was where there were inversions or awkwardnesses or an obvious misuse of an English word to change that. So we felt very, very, very strongly that one should not take liberties with Baba's word. This, incidentally, I think is terribly important because there are so many people in working with material that has come from Baba, especially in translation work I find nowadays, and I do get entangled into a good bit of this, where people feel that certain concepts that Baba has given out, either they're not clear, they feel, so they elaborate on them, or they feel that a certain viewpoint is not compatible with a certain culture of a certain country, and so they sort of adapt it to what they feel is more digestible. I feel personally this is absolute sheer dynamite. Point number two that Baba made indelibly clear to me, and I want to tell you about this because I think it's important for you. You know, I'd like to leave with you just as much as I can, and as you will let me, of things that came direct to Baba, things that I think, that I know were terribly important to me. As you know, after, I'll go on with this point, after God Speaks, that was published, ready for the publishers in 55, as I recall, I went to India, and Baba gave me